Hello, every
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive contribution to the world with their transformational thoughts, ideas, and activities that encourage and inspire. We'll explore important areas and aspects of life, including spiritual, physical, mental, relationships, business, sales, and much, much more. Our co-host so far, besides myself, consists of Tracy Montgomery, author of three books on dating, which have close to 20,000 downloads, Taylor Tagg, the founder and president of Sunrise Life Mastery Services and The Evolving Heart, Michael Collins, author of Ushering in the Golden Age, and Dave Yablecki, based in Victoria, B.C., who promotes artists, athletes, actors, entertainers, and models. My name is Tom Tuttle Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly e-zine. I'll be speaking at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia in a few weeks. Deepak Chopra is the keynote speaker for that event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since age 5. That's 43 years now, and I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication that's the official and only media partner with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website, which is www.tomtall.com. My guest today is Christopher Vanderhoff. Christopher was once a certified psychotic. In fact, over 30 years ago, Christopher was involuntarily committed to a mental institution, locked up and not permitted to leave for more than 3.5 months. Christopher credits his challenges with his mental illness for much of his success in sales, but salespeople don't have to be crazy to benefit from his insights. Sales executive, meeting planners, and speakers bureaus aren't crazy to put Christopher in front of the most demanding and jaded audiences, because sometimes, just sometimes, the one thing that can help the sales force break through to the next level may sound crazy, but really is the smartest thing you can do. Welcome to the show today, Christopher.
Tom, it's a pleasure and an honor to be on your show, and I'm jealous that I'm not going to the conference and flying away with you or to the other parts of the world and continue to, you know, man, I'm just jealous. What can I say?
Yes. There's going to be some amazing people there, you can imagine.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got, I don't know how many CDs of Deepak Chopra I have in my library, but there is a man of wisdom, and I would love to be able to see you in front of the audience as well, you know.
Ah, yes, that'll be fun. They're going to record it, so I will have a DVD of that available when I get back. And Christopher, talking about Napoleon Hill, I almost always start by asking my guests, when was the first time they read Think and Grow Rich? And then also, often there was somebody really important in their life that suggested it to them or gave it to them. Do you remember when you first read Think and Grow Rich, how long ago that was?
Well, I'm guessing it was about 25 years ago, Tom. I was in sales, and I went and saw Zig Ziglar one night for his 3.5 hours of just an awesome, awesome presentation.
Yes.
And I became a personal growth junkie, man. I, first of all, you know, I devoured the 12 hours of Zig's tapes that I bought, but then I searched out every library that I could because I enjoy audio. I'm a real audio junkie. I have at any time 10 audio books waiting for me to listen to. And
wow.
So one of the I love to walk. I walk 3 to 5 kilometers power walk every morning. And so
yeah.
I always love listening to stuff. And one of the first persons I listened to back then was the legendary Bob Proctor. And Bob Proctor and talks about his story and how Think and Grow Rich just changed his life from, you know, phenomenally, and how he not only, you know, not only had a leather copy of the book, but he carried it with him for years and years. And, you know, I think I overheard him say the other day, he still carries it with him. So, obviously, I've read Think and Grow Rich, I'm sure a few times, and memorized parts of it, it is one of the true classics of ideas to take control of one's mind, to set goals, to understand the dynamics of it all, and so forth. Now, Think and Grow Rich is a true classic, and if anybody listening has not read it, go out and get one immediately, right?
Exactly, and there's even so many ways to get it for free these days because it is in the public domain, so price should not even be a consideration when thinking about whether to read Think and Grow Rich. Now, Christopher, this is going to date you, and it's going to date me a bit, but initially started or had great success in sales years ago with Motorola selling cell phones, and this was when cell phones didn't fit in your pocket or your hand. They were large, and they were not the same price as they are today. They were like $5,000 or thousands of dollars. So tell me about your experience with Motorola and some of the strategies you used to become one of the top salespeople for the company on a product that wasn't exactly cheap.
Well, there's no question about it. Wasn't cheap in the beginning. Cell phones first came out in 85. I entered the industry in December of 86. And the handheld portable 2-pound ones didn't even come out until into 87. And they didn't even work worth a darn back then. So car phones or the combination packages sold anywhere from $7,200 down to $4,000. And if I tried to call through to the president of the company, the secretary would always say no, he wouldn't be interested in that, because the media had played it up so much so that it was a rich and famous toy.
And so
it was tough. I tell you, I don't think I've ever told you this part of the story, Tom, but in the beginning, man, I struggled. Oh, I struggled. And I saw hundreds, the 100% commission sales with Motorola, and I saw hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sales reps come and go over the years because they just couldn't hack the rejection, they couldn't hack the non-performance. But fortunately, before Motorola, I'd worked with Dale Carnegie Training, and I truly had an understanding of the potential that we all have. Mind you, I struggled with Dale Carnegie Training selling their courses for 3 years. So my first, the first 3 months that I was with Motorola, I had one sale, and it was a lead that was given to me, right? And so after 3 months, after 13 weeks, I got a 2-week letter because I was now collecting benefits. And the next 2 weeks, I still didn't sell a phone. And then I got another 2-week letter. And the next week, I still didn't sell a phone. And then I just sort of, I helped people to buy. And in that 17th week, I made 7 sales and made, quite a few $1,000s off those 7 sales. But, I'm sure you probably have read Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, the story of success.
Yes.
And the 10,000-hour rule. Well, I was approaching, I guess, my 10,000 hours of direct sales. And I just, there are literally hundreds of thousands of sales ideas. And with the Zig stuff and so forth, I finally put it together. I learned how to qualify before I'd even go there. I learned how to make sure I built rapport. I learned how to make sure I closed everything on the first appointment. And 1 year after I started, the first 17 weeks, no sales.
Mm-hmm.
Or first 16 weeks, no sales. 17th week, I had those sales. In December of 87, I had 56, and they were almost all presidents of companies. I learned
wow.
how to prospect. I learned how to get through the gate shooter. I learned how to get in. I had 56 appointments. And, Tom, I walked out of 54 of those 56 appointments with a check in my hand. Literally.
Holy.
I walked, you know, and in 1987 dollars, I made $22,500
in one month.
In 1 month, in 1987 dollars. So,
wow.
I mean, I finally, you know, I struggled for years and years and years in commission sales, but I finally put it all together. And the most important thing is, I guess I never stopped learning and studying sales and learning. You know, I can't help but say it over again. There are literally hundreds of thousands of sales ideas. Now, what one idea is going to flash up from the unconscious mind at that exact millisecond that you need to ask the question that's going to move you ahead in the sale? So,
right.
So fortunately, I had the stick-to-itiveness to do it, right? I was just crazy enough to not give up.
Exactly, and that's probably that key, along with maybe going the extra mile, probably like one of the greatest keys in sales. If you just never give up, eventually you're going to succeed in sales. And so attitude as well. You had to, obviously, if you have 16 weeks of zero and you can still keep your attitude going, this is when the breakthroughs in week 17s happen to people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had mentioned about secretaries and that, receptionists screening. What about when you get to the president and you have the right product, but, you know, we all salespeople are going to have problems establishing trust with prospects that are cranky, the difficult ones. Maybe you catch them on a bad day. Maybe they're just not cranky people in general. But, you know, all salespeople know of those calls where the prospect is cranky and difficult, at least to start. How do you establish trust? Because Zig Ziglar said that people will buy from you if they like you and they trust you. So what do you do to establish trust with those tough, tough prospects?
Well, there's two parts of this I'm going to answer. First, the first part is, what do you do before you even get to the customer? And what I always did was I would always arrive, you know, at least 10 minutes, if not 15, 20 minutes ahead of my appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to chat with the receptionist. And she could be, and a lot of times the receptionist is also the switchboard operator, so she could be very busy. So, you know, I needed time to speak to her.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, you know, so number one, I got to build rapport with her because I want to ask her some questions that she's going to help me with the boss.
Yeah.
And so, you know, number one, you treat her like a god. You know, you shake hands with her. No one, most people don't do that. You shake hands with her, which is a respect for who she is.
Yeah.
And find out her name. And
mm-hmm.
then I would turn around and say to her, you know, Brenda, I've got two questions I want to ask you. You know, the first one is the most important, if you don't mind. And then I would pull out a Lindor milk chocolate and a Lindor dark chocolate. Do you like milk chocolate or dark chocolate? Which do you prefer? Right? And so, you know, they will always take it, you know. And so there you are, man. You broke the ice. You treated her with respect. You treated her like a god and so forth. And then I would say to her, now, Brenda, I've got a question that probably no other salesperson has ever asked you. But, I've got a meeting here with Jack at 2 o'clock. What is it about Jack that you like or admire? And so you draw out a compliment from the receptionist about the man you're about to meet. And then you say, you know, Brenda, is it okay that I tell him that you said so? So you get a permission to pass that compliment on.
Nice.
And then so the very first words out of my mouth when I went in to meet the boss or to whoever I was meeting with was, you know, hey, Jack, do you know what Brenda told me about you? She says, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? And, you know, the compliments will generally always be right on. So you see, you're drawing a compliment out, and then you're passing that on. Well, what a great way to start the conversation when you're meeting the guy. And immediately, you know, naturally your shoes got to be polished and all that stuff because, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's other book that I really, really like, Blink, The Power of Thinking Without Thinking, that people within a fifth of a second, 200 milliseconds, will unconsciously decide whether or not they like you and trust you instantly. And then consciously, within the next minute, within the second and a half, they will start finding reasons to support their unconscious decisions that they already made.
Wow.
You got to shake hands properly, you got to look in the eye properly, you got to, you know, walk with authority, you got to walk boldly and so forth. So the trust just starts right from the start.
Before you even get into the office.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can teach a lot of techniques, and we'll get into philosophy in a minute because philosophy is far more important than techniques. But then one question I would always ask, Tom, is I wouldn't ask how are you today. That's just, you know, everybody asks that question. That doesn't even mean anything anymore.
Yes.
How is your day going, right? And so most of the time, if you're dealing, everyone's busy. Everyone's got a pile of work on the desk. Everyone's go, 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 go. And so somehow in the tone of voice in the person's response and so forth, you say, sounds like you're really busy today. I think by the sounds of it, we should reschedule this meeting. You know, I've never had one person reschedule the meeting. But if he really wanted to reschedule because he's got some gigantic fires to put out, I'd want to reschedule. Right? I mean, if he wants to reschedule, I don't care that I drove an hour to get there. Let's reschedule because there's no way you're going to have a fruitful meeting. So that's a technique, but you have to do it genuinely.
Yes.
And so immediately it does two things. Number one, he's going to be respecting you because you're respecting him and his time. And then the second thing is, no, I booked this appointment for you. And it sort of tells him to click into mind, get everything out of my mind. I'm here to see you about what we meant to discuss. So that's a technique, you know. And then, if you haven't set the time, if you didn't set the length of the time, another question you immediately ask up front. So, how are we for time? Either how are we for time, or do we still have 45 minutes? So you then set that up front because you're respecting his time. These are all things that all help to build trust. Now, The second part of your question was, how about the cranky, nasty guys?
You know, yes.
And that's where your one's own internal philosophy towards all mankind comes into play in terms of being a good salesperson.
Right.
He within a fifth of a second decides whether he likes you or not. It doesn't matter. If the client or customer is responding to you into you in a negative way, one needs to love all mankind and be totally forgiving to all mankind.
Mm-hmm.
And that will come through in the way you're able to continue to treat the person with respect, even though they may be acting as a real jerk. Because if you don't believe that in your heart, then your unconscious mind will naturally explode and your tone of voice will then turn nasty. So, yeah,
yes.
You know, I mean, some people, when I talk to some people about some of these philosophies of love all mankind, be totally forgiving to all mankind completely so that you're able to deal with nasty, cranky ones and go, whoa, Chris, you know, are you giving me a sermon from, you know, do you preach on Sundays, Chris, and so forth? But,
yes.
You know, the unconscious mind is so powerful, and if you are not able to overcome, if you don't truly believe in your heart, and you don't, that you do love all people unconditionally and are totally forgiving, then it will come through and you won't have, because your unconscious mind will explode.
Exactly. Right?
So,
and that's the same. I was speaking to some VON personal service workers last week, and one lady asked me, what about the clients, they call them, patients, clients that are really nasty? They, you know,
yeah.
She was saying they're not a hard, huge percent, but how do I stay nice and positive? And I told her, just like you had said, if you have the philosophy of every person being valuable, this is somebody's mother, then that will come through in your communication. Your mind may still say to itself, this is a cranky person, but you're not going to treat them like a cranky person or voice or use your words to annoy the cranky person. So you're right. If you have the philosophy ahead of time, and you can't fake the philosophy because people are going to sense insincerity and they're not going to trust you.
Okay, and let me add one more point there, Tom, and that is, you know, in the book How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, and if you wanted to put, you know, if your top five classics of the last century, well, Think and Grow Rich and How to Win Friends and Influence People, back in chapter number one, you know, handling people, don't criticize, condemn, and complain. You know, stories about how, if we stop and think about it, you know, back to that VON and her patient.
Mm-hmm.
If you were born with the genes that person were born with, and that person is probably maybe 75 years old, and you know, we think, you know, 10 to 15 words per second. Therefore, we have 50 to 60,000 conscious thoughts a day. So by the time a person is 75, if you multiply it out, that person has had 1.5 billion conscious thoughts.
Wow.
So if that patient has had, if that patient, you know, if the, and those, you know, are what we think is affected by our environment, by our friends, or how we grow, where we work, who we this and that, their entire life, where the way people think are dramatically affected about how they were properly parent or how they were improperly parent and so forth. But at 75 years old, if the Victoria Order nurse had realized that if I was that person and experienced life the way they did, and I was born with their genes and had the same 1.5 billion conscious thoughts that that person have, then you'd behave exactly the way that nasty patient is behaving, right? You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think of the example that Stephen Covey writes about in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Subway.
He was on the subway, and some guy wasn't looking after his kids. They were rowdy, and he happened, mentioned it to the guy, and the guy's wife had died that day. And Stephen Covey just felt horrible because he was assuming it was a pretty negligent parent when instead it was just the family that had lost their mother that morning. And so we can't ever make those judgments. As you said, 1.5 billion thoughts. You don't know what went into those thoughts and what created those thoughts. And so you have to be your best, even with those tough customers and clients, and that's a matter of your philosophy and your personal beliefs. And if you don't have it, you're not going to be able to fake it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm dealing with the elderly. You know, my mother was, in an old age home for a while, and then a nursing home and so forth, you know. And, I look at all the people who there who, you know, when you're just in everyday life, how many people are really working on improving their mind and how and so forth and living fruitful lives? A lot of people live very miserable lives and right until their death, you know. I mean, hopefully the people that are listening today will get something out of our talk today. But the fact that the people that are listening, they're listening. You know, how many people are not listening? Most people who should be listening aren't listening, you know.
Exactly.
And
how to reach those is a tough thing for sure.
Yes.
Now, you were talking about sales, and here's a question that all salespeople will want to listen in on the answer. What do you think is the number one top of the list, number one secret to joining the 1% club, 1% of the top salespeople club? What do you think is the number one secret for that?
Well, there's no question that for those people that are listening right now, if they had been listening with the intensity, if they had poured their heart and soul into learning everything they could in this 45 minutes, so much so that they are able to go and share and teach the ideas that we shared today in 3 hours from now. So, I told you about that massive success that I had in that December of 1987. You know, I mean, out of 135 salespeople, I was number one in the country, right? There's no question about it. I was number one. And I'm proud to say that the next 8 quarters in a row, I was either number one or number two in the country, right? I mean, I'd put it all together. But in January of 88, at our quarterly sales meeting, the Craig Farrell, who's the regional manager for all Ontario for Motorola at the time, he asked me to give a seminar on time management. And wow, holy cow, I guess I knew how to manage my time if I was able to do it. So thinking about what I was going to teach caused me to reflect internally on, so what was so important about what I did? Because obviously I did manage my time well enough to have those incredible results.
Mm-hmm.
And so the number one secret, okay, to really joining the top 1% is when you read as though you're going to go teach it. And secondly, go and teach it. I'm sure, you know, I mean, that's, I stole that idea from Covey, right?
Yes, exactly.
It's not an original idea, it's Covey, you know. You know, learn it and then go teach it. So if there's any sales managers on the line, have your salespeople teach certain aspects about whether it's, you know, cold calling or, on the phone or prospecting or making presentations or negotiating or whatever. But call upon your salespeople and ask them to, go study on this a little bit, but in a month from now I want you to do a 15-minute session on teaching some aspect of the sales sales personalities. So you see, if all of a sudden in a month from now I'm expected to give a 15-minute or half an hour talk to the rest of the salespeople about understanding personality styles, don't you think that would cause one to to become far more conversant with all the aspects of personality style. So
exactly, and what a great idea, because generally sales managers will do those presentations themselves, and then salespeople are often just by human nature tuning out sales managers. But if one of your colleagues is researched and is doing a presentation, you may pay more attention, you may listen closer, and the guy who's doing the presentation, he's going to research enough so that he doesn't sound like a fool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
And so this will instill those, it will instill the principles in him as well as he studies it and delivers it.
Mm-hmm. So to summarize it is, listen or, you know, or if read, I mean read or listen, material as though you're going to have to go teach it, okay? So just be an incredible, aggressive listener, and then find an opportunity to teach it. You know, I'm sure you've heard the old saying, the teacher always learns more than the student.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you've ever heard that saying, but the teacher always learns more than the student. I remember my dad, who was a full-time professor at chemical engineering in Waterloo, and He says he used to spend 15 hours to prepare for a one-hour lecture all year long. All year long, you know. So, I mean, okay. Well, that's my number one secret.
Number one, and now what?
Join the top 1% club.
Now, what about this one is about attitude, because day-to-day our attitude is affected by our emotions. It can go up and down. What do you think in sales? What is the most important attitude one has to have in order to continue to grow and become better and better?
Mm-hmm. Well, I sort of, in the question itself, when I gave you that question to ask me, Tom, I gave a hint to the answer, because if you just ask people, you know, what's the most important attitude to have in sales? And, you know, you may get enthusiasm or confidence or, you know, or any number of other attitudes. Well, you know, the most successful, you know, CEOs and so forth, and the most admired, are leaders that not only have the ability to lead, to be organized, to be aggressive, to be so forth, but they also have the ability, you know, to be compassionate and so forth. And so strong leaders and strong salespeople have to be able to do both. And the only way that we can learn, truly, truly learn to develop all those skills and abilities is to be humble, to realize, hey, I don't know it all. I don't know, you know. And so, again, being humble when we study and read, knowing, hey, I, as I get older in life, the more I know, I don't know, you know.
Yes.
And
yes.
So the most important attitude to grow and continue to develop our skills and develop our abilities is you got to be able to be humble and allow other people to teach you and to take every experience in life as a learning experience. It doesn't matter how you failed or you walked out of an appointment and, oh, I blew that call. I should never have said this or I should never have said that. Well, you know, if you come at it from
learning experience.
Every experience is a true, true learning experience, and the only way that experiences can be truly, truly learned is to be humble. That's not to say you need to be confident and enthusiastic and so forth, but to have that well-rounded balance of attitudes, which includes humility and to be humble. Yeah.
Now, you worked with Dale Carnegie for a while, and I was speaking with them recently for the Canadian Business Journal. This is the 100th year of the Dale Carnegie Organization, and so they're putting on a big promotional thing about that, and the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, amazing book. I use that strategies from that book to meet the then Prime Minister of Canada, Brian Mulroney, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first goal I ever wrote, and I used strategies directly from Dale Carnegie's book to be able to do that. Tell me about that organization and that book, because as you mentioned, besides Napoleon Hill, that is another older writer with timeless wisdom who that book probably still sells hundreds of thousands of copies every year.
Oh yeah, no, it's a gigantic seller. I mean, I don't know how many tens of millions of books have been sold now, but the book How to Win Friends and Influence People was written over a 25-year period.
Yes,
Dale Carnegie started teaching public speaking at a YMCA, and it's grown to become the world's largest training organization in the world, with franchises basically everywhere and so
mm-hmm.
forth. So, but Dale Carnegie realized that in addition to effective communication skills that he was started to teach, the second most important skill area that we need to have is human relations skills. So
yes.
It took him 25 years, but he just kept on, okay, you know, first it was some cue cards, and then it was this, and then it was some pamphlets and so forth. And he eventually gathered up 30 principles that are timeless.
Yes.
They are timeless principles that, you know, in 1,000 years from now will still be just as important.
Exactly.
And they've actually just come out with a 75-year, on the 75th anniversary, revised it for the digital age, where, you know, they're talking about emails and
and
so forth as well. So that just came out half a year ago. So How to Win Friends and Influence People in the Digital Age. So those principles are so so true to me that I, on a very I actually, as part of my as part of my weekly routine, I listen to all 30 principles that I have on recorded on one of my recorders, and I listen to all 30 principles once a week. Yeah, I just
have
a summary of each one, but you know, it's been 25 years since I was involved with Dale Carnegie directly, but it is an awesome program, and to see the growth that happens in people when they take the Dale Carnegie course, because people, you know, the key focuses are effective communication skills, human and relation skills, confidence and enthusiasm. So those are the four areas that that they work on in.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an eight or 9 week program now. It's a couple thousand dollars, but
Well worth it. One of the best programs in the industry, for sure.
Oh, no question.
Now, what about sales training materials? What are some, is there some sales books specifically related to sales that have really impacted you greatly, or even maybe some sales trainers that you've really admired and really follow some of their strategies and ideas?
Well, the very first one that I was exposed to, I mentioned earlier, was Zig.
Yeah.
So 12 hours of Zig. I still listen to all 12 hours, I would say, once a year. I mean, Zig was such a powerful man.
Secrets of Closing Sales, I think
Secrets
that
of
one
closing,
is, isn't it?
Yeah, Secrets of Closing the Sale, yeah. So, I mean, you can buy, there are shortened versions that are available, you know, Amazon's and so forth. The four CD, but if one is going to, you can only buy the full 12 CD pack right from Zig Ziglar.
Ziglar Corporation.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a classic one, isn't it?
Yeah, there are so many. I mean, Jeffrey Gittimore is a gigantic guy, a trainer in the
mm-hmm.
industry. Tom Hopkins, How to Master the Art of Selling Anything, and he's got a bunch of books, but the other title of the second book that I really, really liked was Act Like a Lamb, Sell Like a Lion or something.
That's a good one, too.
But, you know, there are literally, in fact, I don't know, at the Toronto Library anyways, there are, in the Coach in a Box audios, there are 143 downloadable books. I mean,
most
any library, the number of books that you can, downloadable books that you can get through your local library is immense. Now, some of the good ones, you may have to wait. You may have to wait a week or two because when they, you know, it's only good for, it's programmed to only last so long in your on your computer or whatever. But,
right.
I mean, there are countless books. Or another thing I do sometimes on a particular subject is I will queue up 10 or 20 or 30 YouTube clips and...
That's a good one, too.
And put your recorder on and play them and just play them all and play automatically in a row. Click them all on to watch it later, and then you click on play them all, but leave your recorder right beside it. These little digital recorders are so darn good nowadays. And then there you've got something to listen to while you're shopping, while you're walking, while you're exercising, while you're driving a car or whatever. There are a lot of books. There are a lot of books that I listen to that I maybe missed 20% of because I was shopping for an hour and a half or something, right? I'm busy and all of a sudden I'm talking to the deli lady or something.
Yeah.
Too much bother to reach in and just stop. You just flip your headphones off or earbuds out. And so you miss maybe 20% of the book. But it doesn't matter. I still caught 80% of the book while I was walking and shopping. I'm just an audio book junkie. I have all kinds of little. I think I have four little digital recorders because I'm always recording something on this one or that. And you know.
And in every book, there's one or two or three amazing tips that could just totally change someone's sales career around.
Yeah.
Change your life. We have a few minutes left. Why don't, can you tell our listeners where to find you? Because I didn't tell them your website earlier, which is a pretty great website, too. I like the name.
Well,
and how they can contact you maybe by email as well. Because anybody who's looking for someone to do a sales keynote for their sales team, definitely they should contact you. So tell them where they can do that and a little bit more about yourself and email and that sort of thing.
Sure. It's the website name is insanelygreatsaleskeynotes.com.
Okay.
insanelygreatsaleskeynotes.com. Or you also can just say, go to Christopher Van Der Hoff, VanDerHoff.com, and it'll get you to the same page as well. And my email is Christopher@insanelygreatsaleskeynotes.com. If you don't remember that, but you remembered one of the websites, there's a contact page as well on the on the website with the phone numbers and so forth.
Thank you so much for your time today, Christopher. I really, really appreciate it. And again, listeners, the website is insanelygreatsaleskeynotes.com. If you're looking for someone to do a sales presentation to your team, certainly give Christopher a call. Thanks, Christopher, and have yourself an amazing day.
Well, thank you for the plug, and I've got a sign-off for you I guarantee you've never heard before, Tom.
I love
it. Tom, make it a bodacious day, and always expect miracles.
Amen. Thanks,
Amen.
Christopher.
All right. Thanks, Tom.